You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
When it rains, it pours. That's a literal statement on this rainy Friday in Houston, but unfortunately, it's also an appropriate figurative statement as it pertains to the current problems plaguing the Houston Rockets basketball team. On that unfortunate note, welcome in to another post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Friday's show is sponsored by Action Heat, which makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Stay toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat apparel, and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. As we chat midday Friday, the Rockets are finally back in Texas, getting ready for Saturday night's conclusion to the road trip Saturday afternoon, that is, against the Dallas Mavericks in downtown Dallas. And they arrive back largely with their tail between their collective legs after Thursday night's deflating, demoralizing, awful 118-91 defeat in Utah, nationally televised game. The Rockets, quite simply, embarrassed. They somehow hung around down only 8 at halftime despite a very uninspiring effort and then just had the doors blown off of them in the third quarter, outscored 38-11, just a awful, atrocious performance by the Rockets on Thursday evening in front of a nationally televised audience. Not much to say about it, and that's why for the majority of the show, we're actually going to be speaking more about off-court issues, because we did get some clarity late Thursday about the contract statuses of Daniel House and Gary Clark. We'll discuss that in segment two of our three-part show, and then in segment three, we'll discuss the trade that hopefully will happen today, being, as we discussed in yesterday's show, the aggregation deadline. If you want a player you acquire to be eligible to be traded at the deadline in February, the real deadline that is, then you need to acquire them by December 7th, that's today, Friday, in order for the 60-day period to expire before the deadline so they can be aggregated in tandem with other assets to strike a deal if one is there for the Rockets at the trade deadline. And if there's something that should be obvious at this point, it's that the Rockets need outside help, because after Thursday's 118-91 loss, in which the Rockets were largely uncompetitive, they're now 11-13 on the season through 24 games, and it's tough to see the solution coming internally when you're multiple games below 500 at this juncture of the season. And really, what's most troubling to me from a Rockets analyst perspective is how difficult the problem is to diagnose. It would be one thing if the popular narratives out there, such as letting Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute go in the offseason and the Rockets' perimeter defense had just plummeted and that was what was plaguing them, then it would be pretty easy to diagnose a fix because, okay, you can go out and get other players that can give you comparable levels of production on the defensive end. The issue for the Rockets is that the problems are so widespread, it's not like you can just point to one particular thing and say, well, this is how you get back to the 65-win juggernaut you were a year ago. Because largely this year, they've been a worse defensive team than an offensive team, and if there's been one consistent issue, I would say defensive rebounding, where they've been near the bottom of the league all year long, is an area where they could use some help. But really, the Utah game on Thursday night, it was about the offense, and that goes back to the second half in Minnesota when they scored just 29 points. The Rockets went through a stretch from the second half in Minnesota through the first three quarters in Utah where they scored just 85 points in five quarters of basketball. And to put it in perspective, entering Monday's game, starting with the Indiana game on Sunday, November 11th, that was when the Rockets were 4-7, but that was the beginning of their five-game win streak. The Rockets entered Monday night with by far the best offensive rating in the NBA over that stretch, and that's not insignificant. That was a period of well over 10 games. So to go all of a sudden from that version of efficiency to 85 points in five quarters is just staggering. Now, in the final box score, the Rockets scored 91 points, but that doesn't even really do it justice. The Rockets put up a lot of points, 35 in the fourth quarter when the game was long, long over, and that kind of massaged the final to look not as brutal as it actually was when the Rockets had just 56 points through the first three quarters of the game. So for a team that of late has been plagued by defense and depth issues, well, now all of a sudden it's gone back to the offense being a problem. And it's just so tough when the issues are this widespread to figure out what to do. And in this game, it starts with the stars. James Harden, Chris Paul, they just were nowhere near good enough. Combined 10 of 27 from the field, 12 turnovers. James Harden, a team worth minus 27 in his 27 minutes. Now, the Jazz deserve some credit. They certainly had a role in James and Chris's defense, offensive inefficiencies, I should say. They forced Harden to his right a lot. And with Chris Paul, now Paul in the box score, he was 5 of 11 compared to 5 of 16 for Harden. So it looks like Chris was a bit more efficient. But really, he started 3 of 3 in the first few minutes of the game. Then he was 2 of 8. So down the stretch, he was just as bad. And then between them, again, 12 turnovers, I believe 5 for Chris and 7 for James. So by and large, they weren't good enough. With Harden, the Jazz did a great job of shading him to his right. With Chris Paul, the Jazz big men, especially Derek Favors, who took on a Herculean role after Rudy Gobert was tossed just 3 minutes into the game. Favors moved his feet really well on switches to where Chris Paul couldn't get separation when the Rockets thought they had their mismatches. So you do tip your cap to the Jazz to some degree. I know they're just 13-13, but there's a reason why they were seen as outside of the Rockets as maybe the top threat to the Warriors in the Western Conference entering the season. Now, they've had their own issues, but they were brilliant on Thursday night, and so you do give them a lot of credit for that. Clint Capella, he had a double-double, 12 and 10, but he was just 5 of 14. I thought he was largely out-tough near the rim by Derek Favors, and again, the game got a little weird after Gobert was ejected early on. The fans you could see in Salt Lake City, which is the closest thing to a college environment there is in the NBA, kind of rallied around that, and the team, everyone was playing inspired ball, so to some degree, it's a reflection of how the Jazz made the game in terms of mucking it up. But the bottom line is the Rockets, especially on national TV, against a squad they played in the Western Conference semifinals a year ago, there should have been a way to match the intensity, and there simply was not. The so-called big three for the Rockets, James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, none of them were anywhere near good enough. They weren't efficient. And then your role players that are expected the most out of, at least contractually, P.J. Tucker and Eric Gordon. Tucker was scoreless, attempted just 2 shots in his 18 minutes. Eric Gordon, 23 minutes off the bench, but just 3 of 8, single digits with 9 points. Really, the only bench players that had any impact were Michael Carter-Williams, and that came in extensive garbage time in the fourth quarter. There was nothing really that you can take out of the players who were playing for both sides in the fourth quarter of that game. As mentioned, for the Jazz, they're led by Derek Favors, who played some inspired ball in the absence of Rudy Gobert, stepping up with 24 points and 10 boards in just 25 minutes. And even though it's largely been an all-star caliber season for Clint Capella, it certainly was not on Thursday night. And to me, that's the most troubling aspect of this, is that even the Rockets' mainstays, the guys who you think should be your foundation, were nowhere near that on Thursday. And that's what makes fixing this problem all the more concerning. I said it during the game, the most common theme to the Rockets this year seems to be their fragility, in that when they're good, they're really good. One of the narratives that I kind of push back on is this idea that, well, the Jazz are a good team and the Rockets, they're only good against not good teams. That's not really reality as far as the full 24-game slate. Now, it might be of late because the Spurs and Bulls are not playing good basketball, but when you look at the entirety of the 24 games that we have with the Rockets 11 and 13, they've beaten some really good teams. That 5-game winning streak that they just reeled off a few weeks ago, Pacers, Nuggets on the road, Warriors, Kings, Pistons, all of those teams are above 500. Those are really, really good basketball teams. So when things are going right for the Rockets, they can be really good. They can remind you of the team that won 65 games a year ago. But then when something, anything goes awry, one problem seems to become 5 or 6. There's a certain mental fragility to it. There's just not the same core belief, in my view, that there was a year ago. And that's why, in my eyes, it's so tough to fix this problem, because it would be one thing if it was just consistently the depth, or if it was the perimeter defense, or if it was the rebounding, or if it was needing an extra creator offensively. And yes, at times the Rockets have needed all of those things, but generally speaking, you'll have some games or many of those areas look great, and others will be a problem. And then it will flip to that the next game. And then you have oddballs like Thursday night in Utah, where the guy is your big three, who should be your foundation and the anchors that even if everything else goes wrong, you feel good that you're going to have a certain level of production from those three, and that goes wrong. For all the criticism that the defense has gotten of late, the Rockets actually hung in there on the glass. They limited the Jazz to just 53 points in the first half, and really, that should have been enough to keep the Rockets level, if not slightly ahead, with just an average offensive performance. Instead, it was just five consecutive quarters of just woeful play. As mentioned, 85 points in five quarters, dating back to the last two in Minnesota on Monday, and then the first three in Utah on Thursday. And whereas Monday, you could have, at least to some degree, attributed the performance to tired legs. It was the third game in four nights, seventh in 11, and there's a lot of mileage, especially with some of the injured players during that stretch. Well, the Rockets entered this game off of two consecutive off days. So there are no excuses. There is no reason that this should happen. And really, over the course of the season, it's completely out of line with what the data would tell you, which is that the Rockets, on the balance of the year, have been a very good offensive team. Yet once things started going poorly, and I think the crowd in Salt Lake City played into that a little bit in the early going, the spiraling effect started again, and I know I've used that phrase a lot this year, but I keep going back to it because really that's the most common theme that there is. They're mentally fragile, and when something goes wrong, there's a spiraling component to it that makes all sorts of other things, even if on paper there is no rhyme or reason for them to go wrong, well then they do. And that's the theme of the 2018-2019 Rockets to this point. How do you fix it? Quite frankly, I'm not sure, because it's not like, well, there's just a deficiency in one particular area, so if you go out and get this certain piece that can address that, then the problem should be fixed. It's a lot more complex than that when the problems appear to be more between the ears than they are X's and O's or personnel-based. Now, certainly depth can help. Certainly more defenders can help, because by and large, through 24 games, they've certainly been worse on defense than they have on offense. But to actually get where they want to go, it's not just about the X's and O's and what they can do tactically. It's also about the mentality. And I'm not sure how easy that is to fix, but I do think after being well over a quarter of the way through the season and now getting close to a third of the way through the season, I think we're at the point where we have to recognize that to even have a chance of changing that mentality, you probably need some outside blood, some new voices in that locker room to try and change the dynamic. How could the Rockets do that? We'll talk about that in just a moment. But for now, I want to tell you about our great new sponsors over at Action Heat, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And our friends over at Action Heat, well, they make the world's best battery-heated clothing, offering you heat on demand at literally the touch of a button. With a line starting at just $39, Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat through the use of heating panels similar to those of a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees, and they're powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours per charge. The batteries can also recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're using them. Action Heat offers both men's and women's products, with new styles and models for this winter season. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe, with offerings including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments. It's perfect for anyone on your holiday shopping list, really for anybody that loves the outdoors or just hates being cold. The best part, of course, is that we've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off of your entire order. To take advantage of that, just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything they've got. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Let Action Heat keep you toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter, and we thank them for supporting today's podcast. So jumping back into the program, as we continue our way through our usual three-part show, segments two and three are going to be less about what happened on the basketball floor last night, the deflating 118-91 loss in Salt Lake City, because there's not much to say about it other than it was awful. Everything that could go wrong did. Not just the usual issues with defense and depth, but James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, none of them close to good enough. And I would say Clint Capella, most disappointing of all, to watch Derek Favors playing major minutes after Rudy Gobert got ejected early in the game, go off for 24-10 in just 25 minutes. That reflects the lack of intensity that the Rockets brought to the game, and considering they entered below 500 and it's a nationally televised game and the Rockets came in off of two off days, There's no excuses. The Rockets have to be better. They're not. And at this point, it's just a matter of trying to figure out externally how they can make the moves to get them back to the level that they expected to be at before this very disappointing 11-13 start. So based on all of that, I know we're all monitoring the transaction wire very carefully, and we spent a lot talking about yesterday's show, the potential of a trade by Friday, which is still very doable. We'll have to see what happens later in the day, because Friday is the aggregation deadline for NBA teams to make trades if they want players they acquire to then be retraded or eligible to be retraded by the actual trade deadline in early February. That's because there's a mandatory 60-day waiting period after teams trade for a player in which they cannot be combined in a package with other assets. So even if the Rockets don't have the pieces or the things out there on the market right now to get a major deal done, at the same time, they can potentially better position themselves for something down the road if they're able to do a deal today. And the benefit of that, of course, is that whatever piece they get today, if they get one, would then be able, if required, to be in a deal at the February trade deadline. We talked a lot about those dynamics yesterday, and one thing I thought was a part of the equation was the unexpected waiving earlier this week of Daniel House. As it turns out, that was not, because that roster spot, which was freed up with House being waived on Tuesday afternoon, was what we first suspected was for the conversion of undrafted rookie forward Gary Clark to a standard NBA contract, the Rockets using a small portion of their mid-level exception to lock him up for 3 years, much the same way they did with Isaiah Hartenstein this summer. And I think we all agree that the Rockets generally need more youth, and it is smart to use a small portion of your MLE to get younger bodies in there, now cost-controlled for 3 years, especially when you're in the luxury tax, which the Rockets are. Now, will Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein prove they're worth it on the floor? We'll have to wait and see. They've had some strong moments in the early going, and they've also had some not-so-good moments, which comes with the territory of being a young player in the NBA. We'll just see what happens as they get more opportunities, and inevitably they will, over the grind of an 82-game season. But the reason, as time passed, that I became suspicious that that could be correlated with a trade is because when Tuesday night came, the initial read, and we had our show with Karthik Prasad, the obvious takeaway was that, well, if they're waiving Daniel House and they could bring him back on a two-way contract, which they did, that roster spot could then be used for the inevitable conversion of Gary Clark. It's felt inevitable for some time because his 45 days on his two-way contract are going to be up in the middle of December. And while he's fallen out of the rotation a bit in the past week, by and large, he's been a quality NBA player for the Rockets, and they want him more than 45 days this season. So it felt like an inevitability. That said, there were 10-plus days still left on his contract. And the longer we got from Tuesday without the Rockets expressing their intent to convert Clark, the more suspicious it became that, hey, maybe this is correlated with what we know independently from reports from Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle and Dave Hardesty of Clutch Fans, that the Rockets are hopeful to make a trade by this week's aggregation deadline. What contributes to this dynamic, of course, is that the Rockets are about the most secretive front office in the entire NBA, and maybe in all of sports. There are so few leaks from the Houston front office led by Daryl Morey. They are truly airtight. And so when time passes without any word, you wonder if something else might be going on. In reality, there wasn't, at least as it pertains to the House roster spot. It's just that the Rockets had to wait the mandatory 48-hour waiver period for House to be re-signed to the two-way. And as soon as that happened, that's also when they were able to convert Clark to that standard contract once House officially passed through waivers and then the roster spot was officially open. And in the absence of any news, then it was pretty easy to speculate that, hey, between this and the confirmed reports of the Rockets being interested in trade this week, there might be a correlation. At least with the House contract, there's not. And the reason that they did it this week, because the thing that a lot of us, myself included, were hung up on, was why would they do it this early with Clark still having 10-plus days left? Well, it turns out there's a couple reasons. The biggest is because there were two off days between games, then that 48-hour waiver period was able to come and go without the Rockets playing a basketball game, so they were able to re-sign House to now a two-way contract before they played another basketball game, which meant that House did not have to miss a game. The other factor that I think was key in this is that because this was done before December 15th, which we've discussed a lot on this podcast, when players are on the league can be traded, there's not that much flexibility with rosters. So by sending House through waivers prior to December 15th, there is less of a chance that he would be claimed. So in terms of getting House through waivers to where he'd be eligible to sign a two-way contract, the same two-way contract that Gary Clark was previously on, then the best way for the Rockets to do that was to do it A, before December 15th, when there's less of a chance he gets claimed because most rosters are not that flexible at the moment. And B, to do it in a multi-day off period where the entire 48 hours could come and go without House having to miss a game for the Rockets in the interim. And not just multi-day off period, but a multi-day off period in which they're all on business days that the league office is open. So the Rockets tried to thread the needle, and they successfully did. Unfortunately, even though House was a part of the rotation on Thursday night in Utah, it didn't make much of a difference. And really, Daniel House, no insult intended, but just nowhere near good enough to offset when James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella don't give you anywhere near what they collectively are supposed to give you. But as far as House, the interesting thing now, he has a clock on him the same way that Gary Clark used to, and that with the two-way contracts, and I believe it's prorated, there's only a certain degree of time that's barely over a month that he can play on that contract before he would have to be sent back down to the G League level. The upside for the Rockets is that really at this point, all they need is to buy time through December 15th. And after that point, with Carmelo Anthony and Michael Carter-Williams and everything else that the Rockets are looking to do with a team that's wildly underachieved to this point, the roster could look dramatically different. And if Daniel House continues to play well, then there will be potentially roster spots open at that point that they could re-sign him to. I think putting him on the two-way, it's just about buying some time to get through December 15th and whenever they inevitably make trades. And then at that point, if House continues to play well, they can reevaluate and potentially free up a roster spot at that time to put him back on the real roster, so to speak, if they determine that he's worth keeping around for longer than the 32 days or whatever's left of his prorated two-way contract. So ultimately, the House contract, or his waiving, I should say, was not directly correlated to the roster spot that the Rockets might need by a trade, and it was more about the conversion of Gary Clark, which was the initial expectation on Tuesday. There was some uncertainty with that, but ultimately, House and Clark were intertwined. It was not about an outside trade and freeing up a roster spot for that. With that said, I don't think it makes the odds of a trade any less likely, because as mentioned earlier, the reports from Jonathan Fagan and Dave Hardesty, that's two really great sources who independently confirmed the news that the Rockets are looking for a trade this week, and the reason that they are looking for it, the aggregation deadline, that factor is still very real. So I do think the Rockets are still working for a move today. It's just that it probably would not be a two-for-one type move where they need the extra roster spot. It's not correlated with the House move. That was just for Gary Clark. But as far as the trade, does it make that less likely? No, I don't think so. The Rockets, they clearly need a move, and I think after Tuesday's stunning, or Thursday that is, 118-91 loss in Utah, the need for outside acquisitions is only more evident than it was before. Final thoughts as we close out our Friday episode, at least our first Friday show. Of course, we'll have more content later if the Rockets do ultimately make a move. One of the narratives that I've seen out there in recent hours on Rockets Twitter that I want to push back on is this idea that unless a trade can radically change the current roster, it's not worth it. I've seen folks just making fun of Daryl Morey for all this convoluted stuff with Gary Clark and Daniel House and the contracts, and to me, it's missing the forest for the trees. Look, at this point, there's not that one move, most likely, especially not before December 15th, that can put you over the top. By the way, side note, on December 15th, we've wondered for a while about whether Carmelo Anthony would actually be tradable. Well, there's a report yesterday from a good source that LeBron James is interested in bringing Carmelo Anthony to the Lakers. Maybe there's a trade avenue there, which can help you both in terms of luxury tax, freeing up a roster spot, and maybe even getting a small asset back in return. We'll have to wait and see. But to get back to my actual point here, anytime there's a minor move and the Rockets are 11-13, it feels like there's a segment of the fan base that immediately downplays it, mocks it, as though it's not worth it because it's not going to solve the problem. I think that's a terrible way to look at it, because really the entire foundation of the Rockets in this era, of course it's James Harden, the reigning MVP. Think of how the Rockets got James Harden. There were so many moves between 2010 and 2012 in which Daryl Morey, it felt like, flipped a few pennies into a nickel, a couple of nickels into a dime, a couple of dimes into a quarter, before finally trading four quarters in that deal for James Harden. To set up the Harden move, it was actually Kyle Lowry for the lottery pick, basically reverse protected from Toronto. And that's what was the key part in the deal that ultimately netted them James Harden. Now, am I saying that they are on the verge or anywhere near acquiring another James Harden-level player? No, of course not. But what I'm saying is that just because a deal doesn't put you over the top now, you shouldn't look at it as not worthwhile. For starters, they're not going to tank. Look, when you pay the money they did this offseason to Chris Paul, Clint Capella, they're not based on a bad 25% start to the year. That's basically where we are, just over a quarter of the way through, going to throw it all away and shift gears. No, the Rockets are not going to tank and give up on this era of basketball. Their chips are in. They're going to do whatever they can to try and fix it. But the trade hypotheticals that I threw out yesterday, let's say the Rockets were theoretically able to move Brandon Knight in a deal for J.R. Smith or Damari Carroll, guys that are more potentially marketable to trade deadline because they're expiring or close to expiring contracts. I have no concrete intel that that's what the Rockets are looking for. That was just my speculation yesterday, because if the Rockets are interested in doing a deal today, then it should tell you that it's not like they're going to acquire someone major if they're interested in potentially repackaging that player at the trade deadline. Now, you could hope that any outside acquisition might change the locker room dynamic a little bit, improve the culture, improve the confidence, whatever you want to call it. But beyond that, I think the Rockets, they would hope for a short-term boost, but also potentially see them as useful at the trade deadline. And so that's why I keep going back to guys who are on expiring or close to expiring contracts. That might be the type that's more marketable in February than they are now. And so that might be how Daryl Morey is looking at it. If you were to do something like that, even if on paper you say, what does that really do to the current group? Well, again, it's not just about trying to fix everything immediately. It's also about trying to position yourself down the road so that even if the deal that you do right now isn't there for you, then maybe down the road it can be. For example, converting Gary Clark to a standard NBA contract and getting the third year based on using a small portion of the MLE. That gives you cost certainty. If he develops as they think he will, and 3-and-D wings do not grow on trees, now he needs to shoot better, but the Rockets, they've long believed that in terms of shooting mechanics, that's one of the things, especially being converted from college, that they can fix in the gym much more easily than other tools that you might be efficient in. So that's why they're willing to gamble on Clark. But giving a small portion of the MLE to get Gary Clark for 3 years, that potentially is a very big deal for a team that's in luxury tax hell for the foreseeable future. Is it going to dramatically change your team right now? No. But if it might can put you in a better state down the road by not having to spend resources on that role, then it can help you out by being able to free you up and whatever assets you do have to pursue other things. And the same logic should hold true for the trades. Even if the Rockets do something today that doesn't blow you away, that isn't the cure-all for everything that's going on with this team right now, there's no reason to just sit and spin your wheels. If it might make you just a little bit better now, and if it might make you a little more attractive down the road as a trade partner when the next wave of Jimmy Butler-type talents inevitably hit the market, then yes, the Rockets should do it. It just feels like there's a segment of the Rockets fan base that, unless the deal is going to dramatically change things, that feels that nothing is worth it, just rolls their eyes. To me, that's not the way you should look at it. It's time for Daryl Morey to roll up his sleeves, and even if it's not the home run deal that can put the Rockets over the top or snap them out of whatever this weird funk they're in now, if you can do something that marginally improves today while also making you more attractive as a trade partner tomorrow, and when I say tomorrow, I'm referring to the trade deadline in this analogy, then do it. And I think that's the way we should be looking at this. Clearly, Daryl Morey made some mistakes in the offseason, but what's done is done. At this point, it's about fixing it. And if the Rockets can do something today that might make them a little better in the short term, but also long term might make them more desirable as a trade partner to get the type of piece that they may need later this year or even next summer, sure, in my opinion, they should do that. So that's basically my final thoughts on this matter, is that I'm not expecting a major trade, but if the Rockets do something that's not major today or anytime soon, even if it's not today, I think certainly by December 15th, the Rockets will be very active in the trade market when all of their players they signed this summer and others around the league are movable. It may be that today, even though they have incentive to do a deal by the aggregation deadline, if they can't come to terms, the Rockets shouldn't make a bad deal just to make one, but you also shouldn't not make a deal just because, well, this team has so many problems, and if you bring in X role player, how is that going to fix all of them? No, that's the wrong way to look at it. With the Rockets, there's not going to be an easy fix to where you just flip a switch and all of this stuff goes away. What they need to do is grind organizationally, make little decisions here and there that potentially down the road can pay off by putting you in a better position to make the kind of larger deal that you need to change the culture, to snap you out of whatever is going on right now. And if there's a deal today, I suspect that will be sort of the logic that's used by the Rockets in that. And no, I don't think you should look down on it. If anything, I think you should appreciate it, because clearly the team is not satisfied organizationally with how ridiculous this current stretch is, and they seem to be taking responsibility and know that it's on them to fix it. Anyway, until that move happens, or until tomorrow's game, whatever comes first, this is where we will leave off here at Locked On Rockets, as your home for daily podcast analysis, good and bad, on everything Houston Rockets basketball. Until the next show, if you want more content from me or about the team, the best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter. That's where, if there's news about a transaction, I'm pretty confident it will break. If you'd be kind enough to follow me on there, at Ben Dubose, that's just my name, and at Locked On Rockets, that's the show handle, then that's where I can keep you updated on anything we learn. Also, Facebook account, we've got that. If that's your preferred social platform of choice, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Also go to website, LockedOnRockets.com, and an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Those are all ways you can access our prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or even inquire about how to become a potential advertiser, just as our friends at Action Heat were today. Remember, stay toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat's battery-heated clothing line, and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Also, if you have not subscribe to the podcast already, this is the part where I plug that potential. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn. The odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find Locked On Rockets, which are part of a great network of shows here at the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts across the NBA, NFL, some Major League Baseball, and college sports. That also includes the red-hot Houston Texans, 9-3 with a big game this weekend against the Colts. A lot more happy episodes at Locked On Texans than there are at Locked On Rockets these days. But you can find Locked On Texans and Locked On Rockets at any of those platforms, because we're part of such a great network of shows, and of course that broadens our distribution. If you'd be kind enough to subscribe and leave a 5-star review, that's how you get the benefit of episodes right when they come out, and we get the benefit of boosting our figures and looking attractive to potential advertising clients, just as Action Heat was today, and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets and Locked On Texans as the only daily podcast covering these great Houston franchises. Anyway, with the plugs out of the way, this is where we will leave off. Again, the unhappy final in Salt Lake City on Thursday night. Jazz 118, Rockets 91. Loss is the second straight for the Rockets. Drops them to just a very disappointing 11-13 on the year through 24 games. And what's next? Well, there could be a trade today. It's the unofficial aggregation deadline. We'll see what happens. If there's not a trade, the Rockets are back in action Saturday afternoon, a late afternoon tip, 5 p.m., in Dallas against the Mavs, a team that, by the way, beat them by 20 last week, although that was without Chris Paul. Of course, Chris Paul, even though he's back, he needs to play better. Whatever happens, though, on the trade front or with the team on the hardwood tomorrow, we'll break it all down right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.